Today on Wings, producer Laura Yaros hears about women's progress against Orthodox religious hegemony in Israel from Reform Jewish leader Anat Hoffman.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
We hear a lot about what's going on with Israel these days as it relates to Israel's neighbors, Gaza, the West Bank, and surrounding Arab countries. But we don't hear as much about the internal problems that Israel is facing, of which there are a great many. One of the most serious is a very divisive issue of the control retained by ultra-Orthodox men over many aspects of civil and religious life. Anat Hoffman is a longtime native-born Israeli activist. She's the director of IRAC, I-R-A-C, the Israel Religious Action Center, and chair of Women of the Wall, an organization founded a little over 25 years ago by Jewish women seeking the right to pray out loud and together at Judaism's holiest site, the Kotel, or the Western Wall, which is the remnant of the ancient biblical temple in Jerusalem. Anat Hoffman is a member of the Reform Judaism movement, which is a liberal branch of Judaism that allows for full equality for women in all areas of religious practice. Anat Hoffman was recently in Montreal speaking and teaching at Temple Emmanuel Beth Sholem, and I had a chance to sit down with her and talk to her about important issues affecting Jewish women and girls and Judaism in general, both in Israel and worldwide. And I first asked her how she became an activist.
I got pissed off. I got very angry. I thought that things are unfair. And the most unfair thing that I encountered was I was a poor student in school following in the footsteps of my very brilliant brother, Ronnie. Uh-huh. And I thought, that's not fair, how he's so good at math. And people say, oh, Ronnie could explain that to you, or Ronnie was my best student, and things like that. Why did he get all this bar mitzvah? He was the jewel of our family, and I was the black sheep. I think that anyone who's listening to me and feels that they had a smarter brother has the makings of a good social activist. It's a good place to start.
What was the first activist thing that you did?
And I think the first thing was to fight the Bezeq telephone company. I got a very high bill from Bezeq, the only telephone company in Israel. I demanded an itemization of my bill. They said that itemization is something that they only do abroad, that Israel has not enough telephone owners to do itemization. They suggested I go back to America, to where I was a student, because Israel will not do itemization of bills. So I decided not to pay my bill in protest, and they disconnected my phone. And by disconnecting my phone, they got me very upset. So I started the Bezeq Afflicted Clients Association. We were 5,000 people, and I discovered that that's what I like to do. Organize people, think of ways to protest Bezeq's policy. And 9 months after we started national conferences of the afflicted clients, a phone hurling competitions, changing the name of Bezeq to Nezek. Nezek means damage. All sorts of mischief around the telephone company. The director general resigned. The new guy put me in charge of the High Court of Appeals of Bezeq. I appealed all our 5,000 bills. Bezeq still made money. We never paid our bills because we were all contested bills. And about a year and a half after that, all Israelis received their first itemized bill, and I became like a consumer queen. If you have a beef with a monopoly, if this lady can win against Bezeq, she can beat anybody. And then I just had to pick and choose what really upsets me. You know, things that don't upset me very much are not worth the work, but things that really upset me. And from there, I moved to the City Council of Jerusalem. I was elected citywide, and I was in opposition to the mayors of Jerusalem for 14 years, elected and reelected many times.
How did you get started with the IRAC, the Israel Religious Action Center? Were you the one that founded it, or you just became the director later?
No. The founding person of and the visionary of the Israel Religious Action Center is Rabbi Uri Regev. Uri Regev, one of the first Sabras to be ordained as a Reform rabbi, brilliant litigator, really a fantastic... We're standing on Uri's shoulders every day. He left to bigger and better things. He became the president of the World Union of Reform Judaism. And I took his place. I moved out of the municipality of Jerusalem to become executive of Israel Religious Action Center, where action is our middle name.
So maybe you can explain a little bit what kinds of actions that this place does.
We are the legal and political and advocacy arm of the Reform Movement of Israel. The Reform Movement of Israel is very connected to the Reform Movement worldwide, including that of Canada. That's why I'm here, visiting with Reform rabbis and Reform congregants. The Reform Movement is way beyond ritual. We have ritual in our congregations. We are very committed to Yirat Shamayim and prayer, but we are also committed to social action, tolerance, pluralism. And we're the only religious movement in Israel with an elaborate civil rights organization working for us. And that's quite amazing that even though our 38 congregations sometimes are struggling, I've never heard in the last 15 years anyone saying, you know, let's fire one of those lawyers in Jerusalem and get an air conditioner in Nahariya. I didn't hear that. Because people are aware that what we're doing is shaping the way Israel's values are coming into play. So we have five strategic goals. One is the issue of conversion. We are fighting that conversions all over the world, Reform and conservative conversions, will be recognized in Israel. For that, we have a legal aid center for new immigrants. We've dealt with over 70,000 people so far. And any convert who has any problem with a recognition in Israel, just call us. We're the experts, free of charge, all the way to the Supreme Court. We need to represent these converts, and we win all the time. We did win this case. It's very important, this recognition. The second thing is recognition of our rabbis and our institutions. We recently won a case that the first non-Orthodox rabbi to receive a salary from the state, her name is Rabbi Miri Gold. She just got a 330,000 shekel check, and she'll be getting a salary for 2014 as well. She and some of her colleagues are now recognized as regional rabbis. We're now in court representing people who may be neighborhood rabbis. That would cover around 150 rabbis. It's important to note that we are in the court 60 times a year. That's more than once a week. We say to the state of Israel, don't call us, we'll sue you. We see that as a religious act, a noble religious act to sue the state of Israel and keep it straight, speak truth to power, and do things right during using the legal tool. Our third issue is the issue of freedom of choice in marriage and divorce. We want recognition of gay marriages, recognition of Reform conservative marriages. Israel doesn't have civil marriage, and worse, doesn't have civil divorce. We would like to see a change in this. Marriage and divorce are basic human rights. The fact that this is done only according to Orthodoxy is a tragedy for both Orthodoxy and the general population in Israel. Most Israelis are not Orthodox. Most Jews are not Orthodox. Orthodoxy is a very well-respected minority in the Jewish world. It's tragic that Israel took the keys to everything religious and gave it to that one minority group. As a result, the minority group become corrupt. But I'm not blaming the Orthodox for anything. I am blaming the state of Israel for giving them such power. I want that power to be distributed fairly between the best. May the best rabbi win. The fourth issue we deal with is racism. We're very concerned about rabbis who are preaching and inciting for racism against Arabs in Israel. There's quite a bit of racism going around under the guise of saving Israel from assimilation. Well, the chances of getting assimilated in Israel are low. Most Jews marry Jews. You can count how many Jews married Arabs in the last year. It's five people. More Jews married people from Nepal than marrying Israeli Arabs. It almost doesn't exist. And yet, there are self-appointed militias that are beating up Arabs for supposedly preying on Jewish women. That's got to stop. We know how this racism progresses because we are students of racism and we know where it goes. And
sounds like the American South.
It sounds like the American South in more ways than one, and we want to stop that. So fighting racism is another huge issue that we're working on. And the last thing is the coercion of ultra-Orthodox values on the public sphere. And here I place everything that has to do with women, be it women at the wall that are not allowed to pray out loud or read Torah
or wearing prayer shawls. And
yes. Or women in the bus, that there were 2,500 rides every day in Israel before we started dealing with it, where women were assigned to the back of the bus and men in the front of the bus, or a radio station doesn't allow women to speak. That's it. Five strategic goals, a very professional organization, and we're making headway in all five.
Anat Hoffman is director of the Israel Religious Action Center and chair of Women of the Wall, an organization founded a little over 25 years ago by Jewish women seeking the right to pray out loud and together at Judaism's holiest site, the Kotel, or the Western Wall, which is the remnant of the ancient biblical temple in Jerusalem.
I remember seeing a picture on Facebook or somewhere that was taken, I don't know, somewhere between the 1890s and the 1920s. And you see men and women just randomly just standing at the wall praying, and it's a very quiet, tranquil kind of scene. You don't see these huge crowds, and there's no segregation going on. And how did it come about that now this wall, which is sacred to all Jews, has become such a bone of contention, and where men get to have all the space and women get to have a small space, and they're not allowed to pray out loud using a Torah and whatever in the way that they wish to pray? How did it get to be such a polarized thing like that?
Here's the good news. The good news is that the momentum is that these kind of segregations in the public sphere are on their way out. And in fact, our organization is doing less and less in this because the Attorney General has adopted in its entirety our recommendations. It is now illegal to segregate on a bus or segregate on a plane or segregate in a radio. It's illegal. So we need to make the Israeli government enforce its own laws, but we're in a much different place than we were before. As for the holiest site for the Jewish people, the keys to that holy site were given to the ultra-Orthodox. The ultra-Orthodox are very, very extreme when it comes to women, and they're giving women a very small space at the holy site and curtailing what women can do. Those photographs that you're talking about from the 1930s were a function of the fact that the Jordanian government, and before that the British government, and before that the Turkish government, allotted a very tiny space for Jews to pray. That's why you didn't see the big crowds. And even though Jews really wanted to have a partition between men and women and clamored to have one, these, the Brits, the Turks, the Jordanians, didn't allow Jews to bring in a partition. That's why there is no partition. But if Jews had their way, there would have been one. So in 1967, when the Six-Day War happened, the wall really didn't have a partition. The partition came about on the 14th of April, 1968, almost a year later, and that's because the Reform Movement came to visit. The Reform Movement came to Israel, and the government of Israel almost fell because there was the rumor that the Reform will come, men and women together, and pray together at the wall, and then the first partition was brought about. On the 5th of December, 1988, a group of women came from abroad. One of them is Norma Baumel-Joseph.
Here in Montreal.
Right here from Montreal, came to Israel and conducted the first public prayer of women at the wall. The tourists went back home, and we, a group of Israelis, continued what they've been doing for 26 years. And we've been fighting for three activities that begin with the letter T, so it's easy to remember. One is tefillah, prayer out loud. The other is talit, that's the prayer shawl that we wear when we pray. The third is Torah is the holy scroll that we read from. And the fourth is tefillin, phylacteries that we put on. All four things are activities that are seen by the state as religious activities that are contrary to local custom, which offend the feelings of others, and punishable by 1 year imprisonment. And in fact, 55 of us were arrested at one point or another for either saying Shema Yisrael out loud, that's a prayer that we say, or wearing a tallit, or putting on phylacteries, or holding a Torah scroll. But all this is behind us. Yesterday was the first bat mitzvah at the wall, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, the 24th of October. We had the first time that a 12-year-old read from a Torah scroll, wearing her tallis, and next to her mother, and praying at the women's section with a group of over 150 women surrounding her. Sashinka, Sasha Lot, is a girl from Be'er Sheva. She came as a baby from Ukraine. Her mother, Irena, has been coming to Women of the Wall for 18 times already. That's almost 2 years. And she comes from Be'er Sheva, which means a bus and a train and waking up at 4 in the morning. And when we thought, who would we honor for this first bat mitzvah, we thought, yeah, a Russian-born baby would be a great idea.
But you were here, though, right? It was too. Yes, you were sorry to miss it, I'm sure.
But I was in charge of the bringing the Torah from London, the magnifying glass that Sashinka used, the strategy of how to get the Torah in and how to have a decoy Torah to bother the rabbi.
Yes, so we should explain that it's still... It's not easy for a woman to just bring a Torah scroll
in. No, it's against one of the regulations of the wall. The rabbi decreed in August 2010 that no one is allowed to bring a Torah from the outside. If anybody wants to bring a Torah to the Western Wall, they have to ask his permission, and he'll give you one of the 100 Torah scrolls for public use at his disposal.
So but not to women.
I asked, and he wouldn't give me one. So that's why we had that miniature Torah, which is a kosher Torah, meaning it is according to the Jewish halakha. It's small, but of course you wonder, who wrote that miniature one? It's so hard to write a little Torah. It takes a year to write. Why were Jews forced to write such a little Torah? And the answer is, someone must have said no. Someone decreed that Jews are not allowed to read Torah or transport Torah, and they wrote a very small one. And it's incomprehensible that the decree now comes from a rabbi who is state-paid, and Israelis pay his salary, which is considerable. He is an appointment for life, and being that he was born in April 71, we're going to have many more years of Rabbi Rabinovich. And his claim to fame is that he's stopping women from praying the way the Jewish world has long time accepted that that's the way women pray.
So what, they had to conceal the Torah and go into the women's section, I presume, so
yeah,
that they didn't see it.
The miniature Torah was brought in yesterday by a man from a different entrance to the wall. He was carrying it in a backpack. He came an hour earlier than Women of the Wall. There was no way to link him to the Women of the Wall. At the given hour, we showed up at the right gate with the large size Torah and, of course, turned away. So the rabbi was relaxed. He turned the Torah away. There won't be a bat mitzvah. The reason everyone knew there's going to be a bat mitzvah is that this whole prayer at the wall was preceded by a bus campaign. We had signs on buses where you see a girl and her mother. The girl is Sashinka. The mother is Irena. The bat mitzvah girl is saying, Ima, why not? Mom, I want a bat mitzvah too at the Kotel. And the buses had their run for about 2 weeks. They were vandalized. The buses were ransacked. And in fact, because ultra-Orthodox people thought that this message is very subversive. Because she says, Ima, me too. Why not? The why not question is the most subversive question in the Jewish world. Why not? And Sasha asked it on the buses and then had her bat mitzvah at the wall.
Some of the men in the men's section must have seen that there was a bunch of women and there was a bat mitzvah going on when supposedly this was against the law. So what happened? Did the men start screaming? Did they come and try to stop it?
Well, considering I was in Montreal when all this happened, I don't know, but from the photographs that I could see in the New York Times
and on Facebook,
it looks like it was a wonderful celebration of mothers and daughters. It's so innocuous, so sweet, so wonderful. Who could be an obstacle for a bat mitzvah like that? And I think the bus campaign ran its course and did a wonderful job for us. We have over 100 names and numbers, phone numbers of girls who want to have a bat mitzvah. This revolution cannot be stopped. If I was Rabbi Rabinovich, I would find other things to do, because these girls will not be stopped. There will be a bat mitzvah next month, too.
In fact, another bat mitzvah did take place on November 23rd with 70 women present, as well as 30 male supporters on the other side of the partition. And the bat mitzvah girl used the tiny historic Torah once again that was smuggled in under the nose of the chief rabbi Shmuel Rabinovich. We continued the interview by discussing more about the historic and legal aspects of women's prayer at the wall.
The Women of the Wall petitioned to the Supreme Court in 1989, demanding police protection for praying at the women's section at the wall. It took a long time for the court to look at this case, and in 2003, sadly, in a large panel of the Supreme Court, 9 judges, 5 against 4, the decision was that Women of the Wall have to be moved elsewhere, to another place, to an archaeological site called Robinson's Arch, right alongside the wall. The government of Israel invested almost 5 million shekel in making a little platform there that is accessible to the handicapped, that might be the place for Women of the Wall to pray. Women of the Wall rejected that solution. We felt it's undignified, we felt it's the back of the bus, and we don't go there. We continued praying at the women's section. Right now, the government is saying, and what if we built another plaza, a whole other area for prayer that is egalitarian and equal and open and beautiful, so that the ultra-Orthodox have their side of the wall with a partition and all the different coercions there, or at another plaza alongside it for everyone who wishes to pray, men and women together, and allow a blind person with a seeing eye dog to come and have bar mitzvah for the deaf and all these other things that the rabbi doesn't allow. Yes, we are negotiating with the government now about the possibility of another plaza.
And where would this plaza be located?
It would be in Robinson's Arch, but it won't be the back of the bus. It would be really another dignified, monumental, huge effort to make a plaza for those of us, when we are the majority in the Jewish world, who are not ultra-Orthodox and do not wish to be separated from women and do not wish all these different coercions that the Rabbi of the Wall invents on a daily basis.
Well, the Robinson's Arch, you still see the wall, or you can you're still beside the wall, or I've never been there, so I'm trying to picture it.
The Western Wall, which is the western supporting wall of the Temple Mount, is altogether 480 meters long. That's about half a kilometer. It's a lot of wall.
Yeah.
60 of these 480 meters are the plaza that we know today. 90, right next to it, will be the plaza that we are thinking about, the egalitarian plaza. There's still more wall. It's going to be right at the Western Wall. It's a very long wall. It was a very big temple.
Now, I understand that there are some women who either are or were part of Women of the Wall who disagreed with this idea that you and some of the, I guess, the current board made this agreement about having this new plaza. And what is it that they wanted?
Well, we have not made an agreement yet on anything. We are negotiating under what conditions would we be willing to leave the women's section. And if these conditions are not met, we ain't leaving. We're going to stay in the women's section and cause the rabbi the same problems that we caused him yesterday.
And every month?
Yes. So we are there to stay. If people want us to leave, they have to offer us something that would actually fulfill our needs and the needs of our powerful coalition. Women of the Wall don't stand alone in front of the Prime Minister of Israel. The two big movements of the Jewish world, the Reform and Conservative movement, are alongside us. May I mention that in North America, the Reform alone are bigger than the Orthodox and the Conservative combined. So we have powerful partners. We have next to us the President of the Federations of North America, Jerry Silverman, and we have Natan Sharansky, who is the president of the Jewish Agency, and he's the one who envisioned this solution. And with this powerful coalition, we are sitting with the prime minister and we're negotiating a possible situation in which Women of the Wall would be willing to consider moving to a different location. Yes, some of our very respected members felt that this negotiation is a mistake, but they are a minority. I believe in democracy, and I believe in the collective wisdom of our board, and our board, especially the Orthodox component in it, are very interested in this solution that actually allows for the first time in Israel's history a real choice in the issue of religious services. Israelis will be coming, and I want to remind, with all the due respect to groups that come from abroad, the biggest and fastest growing Jewish community in the world is Israel. It's Israelis we're after. And I think if Israelis are faced with a choice at the wall, they have a choice in marriage and divorce, and choice in conversion, and choice in a variety of other things. And I'd like to see choice happening in Israel. And the wall is an excellent place to start.
It's been for too long that the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox have been the sole repository of all things religious and civil. So people are either Orthodox or they're completely divorced from religion altogether, if you'll pardon the play on words.
It's a little bit like Canadians, you know. And I ask many Canadians, what is Canadian? And I hear an answer, well, I'm not American. Basically, that's a major component in their definition of Canadian, is that I'm not American. And that's how many Israelis define themselves vis-a-vis the Orthodox. Well, I am not Orthodox. Okay, but what are you? Yes. There's a lot to be proud of Canadian. The Canadian famous people in music and Canadian scientists and Canadian innovation and Canadian food. There's so many things in being Canadian that just to say I'm not American, that's the noisy neighbor from the south, it makes you small. So the same I say to Israelis, you're going to have to wake up and say, what are you Jewishly? You can't just say, I am not Orthodox. What are you? Are you going to have a bar mitzvah? You don't want to have an Orthodox bar mitzvah? Great. What kind of bar mitzvah are you going to have? What kind of wedding are you going to have? Is Judaism part of of your life? What kind of Judaism is part of your life? I'd like Israelis to realize there's more than one way to be Jewish. And that's the essence of pluralism, and that's where we're heading.
Anat Hoffman is director of the Israel Religious Action Center and chair of Women of the Wall. To learn more about Women of the Wall, you can visit their website at womenofthewall.org.il. To learn more about the Israel Religious Action Center, you can visit their website at irac.org. Reporting for Wings, this is Laura Yaros in Montreal.
To contact Wings, email wings@wings.org. And please like our news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose books can be read on the website gift-economy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.